Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast recorded right here in Norfolk, UK. In fact, the Buck in. Do not pass the Buck, it says outside. Ped?
I didn't. I pulled in. That's why I'm here.
Well done. This pub is at Thorpe St Andrew, just outside Norwich, and right by the Rush Cutters. I feel like we still need to mention them. You know, I don't want them feeling left out. Anyway, we are here to bring you all the Formula One action. We are brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to the game by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist and sometime F1 correspondent, as well as being in need of a new intro, Michael Bailey. And in this special podcast, we are going to do something very important. We're going to take on the Motorsport Network Global Fans Survey 2017 and put Formula One right for the world, along with everyone else that also completed the survey. Joining me to do just that, I have an esteemed panel of Steve Rust, Richard Baxter, Perry Hamilton, fresh from Hawaii, and no longer a debutant, Callum Springall. Gents, how are we? Make a noise, whatever, to sum up how you are doing.
Aye.
Good. Aloha.
Evening.
How was Hawaii, Ped?
It was awesome. It's absolutely fantastic. Not just because it was a lovely honeymoon, but it's a totally cool place. It's like a real, it's like America, but not America. It's actually pretty, it's a real melting pot of cultures. A lot of good history there as well. A lot of bad history there as well. But some very, it's fascinating. Really, really cool place to go. Really cool place.
What a lucky, would you think they should have a Grand Prix in Hawaii?
You just have to go round a mountain because each of them are volcanic islands, so they kind of peak in the middle. So I'll tell you what, though, speaking of, though, what I did see advertised was there was a, not a Grand Prix, but they were advertising, I think it's the Indy series, and it was IndyCar. It was around Long Beach in California, so it's like a city race. If that's good enough for the American series to do it, surely we could get F1 out there, couldn't we?
Well, I have a feeling Formula E raced in California at Long Beach last year as well. So, you know, if it's good enough for all of them, we should have a look at that.
No, Grand Prix of Hawaii, I just don't see where you could do it. I mean, you could maybe do it in Honolulu, wrap off some streets in Honolulu, and that would be amazing, wouldn't it? See these cars rocketing down past Waikiki Beach. That would be astounding.
Would be wonderful. I guess it would just take too long to get them all there, maybe. I got invited along. I couldn't make it. Sadly, I had to be in Cardiff. But I got invited along to the Barbados Festival of Speed. That would have been good. So, you know, anything they could do in Barbados, I'm sure they could do in Hawaii. Hawaiian Festival of Speed. Make it happen, Hawaii. All our Hawaiian listeners. I'm sure there's, I'd love to know, well, if there's any Hawaiian listeners, let us know. That's probably unlikely. Anyway, I feel like we're wasting time. So, before we get stuck in, I'll just deliver you our standard plugs. Of course, the NRF1 podcast can be delivered direct to your device or desktop, and then you can listen to us on your podcast player of choice. All you need to do is visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe. You will find your feed link there, and if it's not there, let us know. You can send us an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. It is survey time. As I said, this is the Motorsport Network Global Fan Survey 2017. I think they've done this on a couple of occasions. It's a survey open to all Formula One fans in the world to say how they feel about the sport, what they would like to change, what they feel is important. I think it's time the NRF1 podcast took on this challenge and stuck it to the man and woman. Okay, we're on the first page. It says start survey, so we're going to start survey. Country of origin, UK. Ages, I am 36. Steve?
33.
26.
33.
Slightly more youthful, 18.
Ah, look at that. Still permitted to record for the podcast, so that's good. Which of the following best describes your current main occupation? Journalist and TV presenter.
Well, engineer, really. Some guy.
Human resources.
A student.
None of those things are here. We're going to have to tick housewife. Right, next question. Use a scale of 1 to 7, where 1 is not at all interest and 4 is moderately interested, and then 7, helpfully, is extremely interested. Please indicate how interested you are in Formula 1. 7? Oh, well, no one's answering yet.
I think you can cut in a Len Goodman 7.
7! Oh, it's all gone very quiet in the pub. We're at the Buck Inn, by the way, just so you know. Which of the following best describes you? F1 is my favourite sport and the sport I follow most closely. It's one of my preferred sports, but I also actively follow other sports. Was previously my favourite, but now I follow other sports more actively.
I'm number two. As regular listeners will know, my first love is NFL.
So. I'm two, but football. The other, you know, proper football, soccer. The one where they kick the ball a lot.
I would like to say the first one, but I follow football as well, so I'm going to have to be the second one, I suppose. Really.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as Steve. It's the first one, but I do follow football as well. Yeah.
You can follow more than one sport.
You can follow more than one sport. They've just been greedy, aren't they?
I would say I probably fleet between 1 and 2. It kind of depends how well Norwich are doing, so at the moment I would say number 1.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I would allow you that as well. Callum, which other motorsport categories do you actively follow? All of them are here: World Endurance, MotoGP, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I have to cover the British superbikes when they're at Snetterton and sometimes the touring cars, but other than that I don't really follow any. Formula E a little bit, but not much.
And one or two of us may watch Indy 500 just because Alonso's going to be in it, but I don't actively follow any other motorsport.
No,
just the touring cars.
I'd say I keep up with WEC in terms of the news, a little bit MotoGP, but not so much anymore. Used to keep up with Formula E, but it's sort of like racing a Prius. So,
racing a Prius. What a way to put it. By the way, this is the first section. We'd like to know a bit about you. So there we go. Let's hope we're delivering that now. Part two, your consumption of Formula One. It might get a little bit dry at this point, so let's see how we get on. How long have you been following Formula One? I mean, I was like 8 or something, so that's a long time.
God.
Rich, while you want
to... Probably, to be honest, probably since birth, just with my dad, so 26 years.
Probably 15, I guess.
I'll actually give you an interesting fact here.
Yes.
my first word, supposedly, according to my mum and dad, so hopefully a reliable source, was, I'll say, a slightly infantile impression, or not impression, but interpretation of Ferrari. It was actually Rari.
How cool is that?
I've been following it for longer than Callum's been alive.
That's fine. Yeah, me too, actually. That's right.
I started when I was a kid, watching it with my dad. If he's listening, still got the Twitter handle Ped's Dad, which I absolutely love, by the way.
Shout out to Ped's Dad.
Shout out to Ped's Dad, John, living it up in Cyprus. He knows what he's doing. I started watching it with him, and I was about 6 years old, I think, and I watched all the way through until I was about 14, and then the Schumacher era of dominance bored me away from it. And so that would have been 14. I would have been, oh God, I can't even remember when that was. Around about the millennium, I think. I took a 9-year break, and then I came back and started watching when JB won it with Braun, and been back watching it ever since. So there's a bit of a hiatus in the middle, but I've always kept up and sort of read about it and knew it, but I didn't actively make time to watch it as I do now.
That's true, actually. I had a bit of a hiatus in the middle. We probably had a very similar past, but I had a little bit of a gap in the middle as well, probably while I was growing up. Question 10, we're rattling through them. With around 20 races each season, how many Grand Prix are you likely to watch on TV in an average year? Doesn't say live. I mean, all of them. All of them?
Well, all of them,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, but one of the options is more than 12, and then it says do not watch any Formula One races on TV, which would make me think, why are you actually answering this survey?
I would say more than 12.
Yeah. What about streaming? Because sometimes I stream them from the internet because I'm a bit naughty.
Well, that's fair. It does say TV. It does say TV, so that would be none. How many on TV?
Yeah.
That's true, actually. I do watch half of them on iPad.
How many do you watch on an iPad? How many do you watch on a phone? So... let's just stroll through, Rich, and see what it is.
Let's see. Question 11. During a typical Formula 1 Grand Prix weekend, which of the following do you watch?
Right, well,
okay, so let's go. And then there's the options of never, rarely, occasionally, and frequently. I mean, this might get a bit dull for the listeners, but we've got options of live races, live qualifying. How many of you guys watch what happens live?
When I can. That's my preference. If there's a race that's at 6 in the morning, I will get up to watch it. We don't really do races at 2 o'clock in the morning for British time anymore, do they? So usually I will try to. The only times I won't is if... the race is on at like 6 in the evening and it's NFL season, the NFL will take priority. Or if I'm playing football, then if I'm out playing that and the race is on, I'll obviously be playing football instead. So,
who watches the free practice sessions on a Friday?
if they're on TV, because then I'll sit there at work with a little screen in the corner. I shouldn't really say this, but I'll sit there with the screen in the corner watching the practice.
No one from Archer listens to this, don't worry, Rich.
It's on a lunch break.
Lunch break.
Always, yeah. My good 3 hour lunch break that I have each day for each hour and a half of practice.
Between 9:30 and 1:30, 2 or whatever it is.
Sure, I actually used to get Fridays off at college last year, so that was quite handy. Not so much anymore. So I kind of have to
get older, Callum. You'll realise every day at college is technically a day off.
Well said, Ped, the voice of experience. Press conferences?
No.
Very casual.
I barely even watch the podiums anymore. I don't remember the last time I actually watched the questions on the podium, because a lot of the time they're just so cringeworthily bad.
Yeah, they can be.
I watch it if Webber's doing it, or especially if Jean Alesi's doing it. Shout out to Jean Alesi, who we did see at the Grand Prix at the
and
weekend.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger. That was well worth watching.
Oh, no, then we stop it at Arnie. I watch the press conferences out of probably professional interest more than anything, but there we go. Okay, let's move on to question 12. Thinking about how you follow F1 during a race weekend, how frequently do you view, access, or listen to the following media for Formula One news and information? Dedicated motorsport F1 websites? Autosport?
Yeah, like every day.
Every day? Oh,
yeah,
that is.
Every day, every evening.
General news and social media? I tend to look, especially now that Formula One have upped their game. No, you're shaking your head, Ped.
No, I don't. Because if I can't watch the race live, I don't want to get the spoilers. You see, so I avoid social media on a lot of race weekends.
That's true. That's very true. And WhatsApp.
Yeah, I've avoided our WhatsApp group for quite a few times just to not ruin it.
How dare you, Rich? Come.
Hang on, what was the question?
There's a lot of them.
TV, social media. To be honest, I can keep up with races live and whatnot, so spoilers aren't really so much of a problem for me.
Newspapers is there, but I don't tend to follow Formula One in the newspapers necessarily. During the week when there's not a race, Autosport, or just close your ears to it and hope for the best and listen to the NRF1 podcast for all your news feeds.
BBC
Sport.
Autosport.
Yeah, I tend to check in on Autosport.
Motorsports Talk.
Yeah. Oh, hello.
It's American based, so you get a lot of American chats on there as well, but there's a couple of guys on there that talk Formula One.
Personally, I love listening to Joe Sayward when he's on the Side Podcast, so shout out to the Side Podcast guys. We don't have any particular dealings with them, but I actually fully respect what they do because I think they do a cracking job. Part two continued. How would you most like to watch Formula One in the future? Live race on television, recorded race on television, highlights on television, on demand, online via laptop, online via mobile or tablet? Or does anyone care?
VR headset that is attached to the race leader's helmet, or like the fourth person's back helmet, like 360. So you can just like put it on and then you just look around there while you can choose what car you're on. That's the future, my friends. That will happen. Guarantee you that will happen at some point. There will be 360 cameras on every single Formula One car, and you will be able to put your VR gear on your head and choose which car to ride along with, and you can look around and it will give you full view of the circuit as you go along.
But it's not an option, Ped.
It's a couple of years off, I guarantee you.
Yeah, but they kind of did have that some seasons ago on the red button. And they did also have the cameras that would pan and you could change between cars and drivers, so they kind of had that in the past.
Yeah, agreed.
Live, every time.
I'll tell you what, with the VR, if you get motion sickness, that won't be great.
You wouldn't have a helmet to keep the sick in.
To Mark Webber, he was sick, wasn't he, while one of the practice sessions?
No, it was during a race. VG 2007, I think.
There's audio footage of Mark Webber's radio where he's throwing up and he's telling his engineer.
Oh, God, I forgot that. Wow. Nice. Should we link that on the? We'll link that. We'll dig that out. Someone get me the link, and we'll put that on the social media. It'll go down a storm. Okay. Well, I think we answered that. Some Formula One coverage has moved to pay television in recent years. How has this affected your viewing habits? I watch more Formula One now, less Formula One. It hasn't affected them.
I watch less because I have to stream it online, and that only relies on a website that I can stream it from.
I probably watch it more, but that's because I've blagged people's accounts and pay them in beer.
I pay for Sky Sports so I can watch the NFL. Formula One comes with that, so it's a happy side effect.
Luckily I do have Sky.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Yeah, no, that you are very lucky, Callum. It's well said. You are lucky.
Actually, yeah, I do actually watch more because Sky have obviously a dedicated channel, so they have like the classic races as well.
Well, I have Sky but don't have Sky Sports, but my parents do, so I always go around there and watch it.
So basically, Sky, you're getting no money from us. That's basically the rule there. Okay, continue to your consumption of Formula One. Thank you, Mr. Bartender. You mentioned that you have watched less Formula One coverage as a result of moving to pay TV, which is obviously what I answered when I did the survey. How has the move to pay TV affected your viewing habits? I now completely miss entire races that I would otherwise have watched. I've stopped watching races live if they're not on free to air, or instead watch highlights other. I can't remember what I answered there, but clearly I was just trying to make a protest. When you watch a race on TV, how much of it do you typically watch? The entire race, including preview and post-race? Entire race, beginning to end, watch the start and the end. Get that all in the middle. I just watch the start and try and...
Where the racing happens, forget that.
Yeah. I just watch the start of the race, see if there's a crash. I watch the start and keep watching until it gets boring, you know, if there isn't a crash. I'm adding these, by the way, these weren't actually in there. I only watch highlights of the race. I mean, it depends on the race, doesn't it? But generally, I watch it all as much as I can. Do we all watch as much as we can?
Yeah, mainly start to finish. Yeah.
Start to finish. Well, we'll move on. Have you purchased any Formula One merchandise in the past 12 months? The options are branded polo shirts, branded jackets / windbreakers, branded umbrellas, caps, accessories, for example, keyrings, posters, mugs, model Formula One cars. I love model Formula One cars. Other... I have not bought any Formula One merchandise in the past 12 months.
I haven't bought any, I must be honest.
We've had this discussion in the other podcast, haven't we?
I do have something quite special, though.
The marble from Monza.
Yes.
Which, are you still okay for us to give it away as a prize?
Well, I didn't know where it was, and I actually spent time yesterday trying to find that, because I was going to bring it in, and I forgot to bring it in.
But did you find it?
Yes.
Excellent. And are you still okay with us giving it away as a prize?
Yeah.
Now I love that.
Like I said, if it's for charity, I'll do it.
Well, it's for us. I don't know if it'd be for charity.
Right.
Yes. Do we count as a charity?
Why not?
Yeah. Well, we'll come up with a plan we're all happy with. Definitely, Steve.
I haven't bought anything in the last 12 months, but I've got another pretty special story. So my uncle, on my sixth birthday, which was the 13th of July 1996, that was the same date as the British Grand Prix. My uncle was there at the Grand Prix, and he bought me a T-shirt and some other things and all the press ticket things he had, and he gave them to me for my birthday, which was awesome. And you said about models, I've got a Nigel Mansell Williams and a John O'Lacey Ferrari model at home, sit on the windowsill proudly, but they've fallen on the floor a few times, and I had to glue them back in together. And because I glued the front...
That technically makes you an F1 engineer.
Well, because I glued the front wings on, I mean, this is bad for engineers, the front wheels also got stuck in position so they don't turn anymore.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting a proper job off the back of that. The wheels don't move, but the wing's fine. I had a Scalextric set. There was a Formula One, so it had a McLaren. No, it wasn't Scalextric. They were just model cars, but they were like Scalextric ones, and it was a Ferrari from, like, late 80s and a McLaren. And then I've got Johnny Herbert's Benetton from like 94 as a model randomly. It's something I'd literally waste all my money on if I had any money.
I've got Scalextrics as well from 94. You've got the Williams and the Benetton. So I always like to recreate the famous Adelaide team.
Yes. And then swear at Michael Schumacher repeatedly.
I haven't bought any Formula One merchandise in the last 33 years. So I've just never bought it. I think the only thing I ever had was a pair of earplugs that I had when I went to qualifying at Silverstone once when I was about 12.
Awesome. Wait, keep those.
They got very horrible. And
they got just wore them for 10 years.
They were thrown away.
Yeah, our house is actually a little bit like a memorabilia station, frankly.
Right, we're coming around. Literally, we're having a video around your house, but we'll
F1
we'll,
cribs.
It'll have to be Callum's, and then that's it. But we are all now coming around your house, whoever. But tell us about it.
We've got we'd have loads of paintings up and down the stairs, and in each of our rooms. And in the living room, there's a massive cabinet full of my dad's models and
car models.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And in my room, a few sort of Jensen Button things as well, like photos. And I've got a couple of cabinets myself, so I've got quite a lot of shirts as well from the last 10, 11 years, I think.
This is awesome. And your brother, Dan, is an engineering student. Is he hoping to get involved in Formula One as well?
He is. He's actually doing something to do with F3 Cup. So it's amateur racing.
How exciting.
Also, add in, I did want merchandise. There was one piece of merchandise that I wanted to buy over the last few years, and that was the white Mercedes cap with the Union Jack under the peak that Lewis wore when he won at Silverstone. So I wanted that, but they were sold out, and then when you looked on eBay, they were over £100. So
I was going to say, I expected they'd be on eBay, but they might be cheaper now.
Stupid, ridiculous, expensive.
I've got... I mean, we know DT's got helmets, hasn't he? He collects helmets, so that's good.
Kyle got one as well?
Yeah, well...
I know he raced in his own, but I think he's got a replica as well, I think. I'm not sure.
He's got a cart, obviously, which is good. I've got various bits I've sort of randomly picked up, especially from the Caterham days. I think I've got a GP2 front wing bit that's broken off from one of the Caterhams off my uncle. Various, but I've got a Sam Bird signed shirt that I was supposed to give away for a charity auction, and I didn't manage it, so that's sitting somewhere. That's bad, isn't it? Anyway, yeah,
that's a prize you can do for it.
Yeah,
in our F1 competition,
we'll have to give away some prizes for that as well. Anyway, but yeah, I haven't bought anything, so moving on. Do you actively play motorsport themed games apart from obviously gpro.net?
No, I have to be honest, I don't.
Sometimes. I haven't bought one in quite a few years because I'm on an old console, but I've got the steering wheel in the game and all that, and
I've got F1 2016 on my phone, but I haven't actually had a chance to use it yet, but I do tend to buy it.
I had one for the Xbox, but I played like one season in it, and the problem I had with it is I don't have the time to get stupid good at it, to sink the hours into it to get ridiculously good. And actually, as Rich probably knows because he's already said he has it, if you really want to get proper with the nuances of touching brakes and things like that, as you have to have to drive in a Formula 1 game, you need a wheel and you need some pedals and stuff like that. So you either have to drop the difficulty down, at which point you become like Schumacher in his dominant days and you're lapping everyone up to position 5, or no matter what you do, you can't crack into the top 10. And the point of a computer game is everyone wants to win, but no one wants to have it handed to them, and so it just became a frustrating process. So I just sod it, did something else.
I thought we got a bit deep there. I like that. I have a moratorium on me and computer games. I don't play them because I will lose days of my life doing them, so that's self-imposed, mainly football, but I try not to do them. Callum?
I think judging by Ped's criteria, I probably am stupid good.
Yeah, that's
what I'm like.
I mean, you look on YouTube and there are loads of Formula 1 fans who are setting up their own seasons and filming them on YouTube. Callum?
I know a few. Like, yeah,
it looks a lot of fun.
It does, actually, and they do get quite creative, actually.
So I think we're missing out on this. I think we should do like a podcast team exercise where we all get together and have like a knockout series on a game, whichever one is, but whether you want, I don't know, whether if someone's got a steering wheel or whatever, we can use if we can do that. And I think we should then also do a Scalextrics, where we set up a big Scalextrics track and then have like a Scalextrics tournament.
I don't know if it still works, but on my Scalextrics, I used to have this box and it used to do qualifying in the race, and it used to tell you your time so you could line up on the grid. But of
make
course,
that work. Make that work.
There's only two tracks, so you could either get first or second, so it wasn't that.
Oh, we should do a knockout. It'd be fine.
We should totally do stuff like that.
We'll do that. I have, I don't know if the listeners care particularly, but I want us to sort out a racing sim. There's a guy called Kevin in Norwich, Kevin Milner, who runs a Formula One simulator. It's not quite like Red Bulls, but you know, it does the job, and hopefully we can be able to race with them, and I'd like to be able to do that so we can all have a competition there.
Or we could all get our awesome listeners to send us some money. We can all go on a trip to Maranello and try their simulator out.
Yep, I'll have a word with Kevin. We'll see if we can get the Maranello trip. Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it? We are all due a trip to Maranello. Anyway, moving on. Question 20. What platform do you play? Well, we don't really. Do you play motorsport themed games individually in a league, Callum?
On my own.
What do you play on?
PlayStation. Well, I play on my own, frankly, because to go online on PlayStation is just extortionate.
What does it cost money in?
It's like 40 quid a year.
Whoa!
So, considering I don't have a job, I'm not going to ask my parents for money. So
no wonder they're asking about this. This is where all the money is.
It used to be free as well.
Yeah, I didn't realise that. Jesus, it's a rip-off. Sort yourself out, PlayStation. F***ing hell. Which one do you play out of this lot?
F1 2016, Gran Turismo. My brother's got a set of Corsa, so I've been on that a few times. Project Cars, that's terrible.
That's the thing. They rope you in, and then they're...
Well, the physics are alright, but the AI are useless.
The man who knows his gaming. 23. Oh, which... We don't care about games anymore. That's boring. This is a message for you, our dear NRF1 listeners. In the last year, there is a young British startup that has shaken up the shaving industry. Over 100,000 men have joined Cornerstone and are now getting a smoother shave than ever before. It's a simple combination of great products, amazing customer support, free delivery, and fair prices that has made Cornerstone the fastest growing shaving company in the UK. It's basically shaving's equivalent to Max Verstappen. They've won numerous awards for their super sharp German engineered razor, just think Mercedes, and outstanding customer support, like a Charlie Whiting hotline, along with endless plaudits from the media, including GQ, Esquire, and the Daily Telegraph. That would be Max Verstappen again. Cornerstone know they need to earn your trust, though, so to let you try their award-winning razor for a fraction of the standard price, with this offer you can get £10 off their razor and get started for just £4. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk and enter the code NRF1 at checkout. Visit cornerstone.co.uk to find out what a smooth shave actually feels like, and if you don't like your Cornerstone razor, Cornerstone will even give you your money back, no questions asked. Now, let's get back to that NRF1 podcast, shall we? Part three, the races. Right, now we're getting on to the proper stuff. 26 minutes in, we can actually talk about Formula One. Hope everyone's still with us.
If you're still listening, well done.
Oh, God. It seemed like a good idea at the time.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. I'm enjoying myself.
They can also tell us their merchandise,
yeah,
things.
You guys out there, please answer the admittedly do the survey, because that will ultimately be the best way, but we'd like to hear your answers. I think the survey's closed now, which is why I took like 58 screen grabs, and we're saving you the job, and now you can just interact with us, and we'll change Formula One for you. Don't worry about that. Part three, the races. Now, apparently they would like to have our thoughts on the Formula One race weekend, so I think it's going to start getting interesting. How many Formula One Grand Prix races have you personally, or maybe not, attended in the last 12 months? Has anyone been to a race in the last... I haven't been to the British... Last race I went was a British Grand Prix in 2 or 3 years ago, I think. I haven't seen Lewis win at Silverstone, which is quite annoying because he basically started winning once I stopped covering it properly.
Never seen a race. Never seen a race live. Only ever been to qualifying live. Never been to a race.
I remember being mortified when I was 13. We were on holiday in Belgium with my mum and dad and my brothers, and Spa was on that weekend. They're like, oh, you know what? I think we can go. Oh, yeah, let's have a look. I pushed them and pushed them. Couldn't make it happen. It was like 80 quid on a bank where you wouldn't be able to see anything. They said, I think it was probably prime seats, but they didn't want to spend the money. I was really gutted about that. So Spa is still on my list.
Definitely Spa's my favourite track.
We are wondering if we can go to Silverstone this year. It's on the agenda if we save up our money.
Well, I can speak Spanish, so going to the Spanish Grand Prix would be all right for me. I have been to British Grand Prix last year on the Saturday, and three other times on the Friday, but not on a race day.
It's being at a Formula One Grand Prix is special. I've certainly been privileged to cover it. Very, very enjoyable indeed. How many times have you attended your home Grand Prix in the past 5 years? I think we've just answered that one, gents. Well done. Moving on. Question 26. Apart from your home race, have you attended a Grand Prix other than your home Grand Prix? That's a terribly worded question. In the past 5 years, have any of us... No, no, we wish. It's too expensive. We haven't got that money. Jesus, we can barely keep the podcast going. That's not true. We have great support from you guys. Question 27. Which races do you consider... Nah, this is the question. This probably is the only reason we're doing this podcast. Which races do you consider are essential for the Formula One calendar? And you're allowed 5 as a maximum. I'll read them through because not all of them are on the calendar as it stands. Abu Dhabi, Argentina, Australia, Austria, Azerbaijan, Bahrain, Belgium, Brazil, Britain, Canada, China, France, Germany, Hungary, India, Italy, Japan, Korea, Malaysia, Mexico, Monaco, Qatar, Russia, Singapore, South Africa, Spain, Turkey, and USA. 5. I struggled.
That is quite difficult because there's ones that I was like, oh yeah, that's going to be easy, because I thought, and then I was thinking, no, it's got to be more than 5. I've just thought of.
I mean, I don't think they should limit it to 5. I think you should outline the ones that are actually essential and then take it from there, maybe 7 or 8 or whatever. But it says 5. I need 5 from you.
I can give you 4 for definite, and in order, that's Great Britain, Belgium, Monza, and I've forgotten the other one.
Monaco.
No, what's the other one?
Japan?
No.
Brazil,
that's the one.
I'm kind of with you on that, actually. They're exactly the ones I was thinking. But then it's the all-important 5th spot. And I'm now torn between the idea of what do I personally like, because if it's down to what I actually personally like, as Canada, as yeah. regular, you know, but that's because it's a cracking circuit and it's actually always well attended. It always yields a good race, but is it a global icon? No, it's not. So that fifth one, I would actually probably say is Australia for me. Or Japan.
Japan, yeah. For the record.
Japan and Australia, actually.
For the record, I put Belgium, Brazil, Britain, but I kind of feel like I'm putting that because it's our home race. But then it does, it is the home of, well, we say it's the home of Formula One because we're in Britain. And I don't know if people in Italy see
there's
it as the home of Formula One.
Three Formula One teams established around that area, if yes. not more, that use that as a base. I mean, you name another track that's got that.
That's exactly right.
The last few years since they made the changes to the circuit and updated it, they've been phenomenal races we've had.
And stuff always happens at Silverstone, always happens. So yeah, I said Britain, Belgium, Brazil, Italy, Monaco.
I would say Monaco.
You can't not have Monaco. Whether you think it's a gimmick or not, you cannot have a Formula 1 season without Monaco.
And I'm with you, and I completely agree. I wouldn't put it on my list, but for this question, what is essential to the calendar? What are the races that if you took those races away, those purists among us would go, that's an outrage. It's one of those races. It doesn't make my list, but I can see where you're coming from.
I've always said it's the original street race, whether there is more of an original one, but the most well-known original street race.
Yeah, you say to someone, name a street race in Formula One. They say Monaco. They don't say Canada. They don't say Australia. They don't say Baku. That, you know, these are street races. But the one that you always think of is Monaco.
And we will have much more debate about Monaco coming up ahead of the race because we've already had a set to, well, an annual set to, but it has spilled out into the WhatsApp group.
It's not set to, Michael. We just have different opinions on it. That's all.
I love it. And Japan was the one that, to me, I think it should be six, and I think it should be Japan because I feel like I could draw the line there. But you know, some big races missing, and it helps, I suppose, that Germany, that France have been missing for a while. So you think, well, they're not that integral because they haven't been around recently anyway.
None of us have mentioned the Spanish Grand Prix. Spain has held races at three separate locations at the least.
They've all been boring.
But again, which taps it into the entertainment issue of it. Anyway, go on, Callum.
I think really what's important is that it's not necessarily about the market, so you're not therefore choosing countries that are essential, but you've got to choose tracks that are essential. And I think particularly with, for example, these current regulations where there's so much drag, I think really the low downforce tracks should be coming into their own. So really almost by default, you've got to say, you know, Monza, Montreal, at least. I think other great races, you know, Suzuka, generally Silverstone, and probably Hungary actually is generally quite a good race.
Always a good race. Yeah. The camel riding a skateboard
or a surfboard, I haven't really decided, but yeah, that one.
Could we make this a little bit more interesting for ourselves rather than the website? You can have five that are what you'd class as golden age, and then choose five from your modern Formula One tracks, your more recent Formula One tracks. So easily you could say, oh yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, your Britons, your Brazils, your Japan, your Monaco, you know, your Italy, they're guaranteed, you know, because they're classic. You can go back and find black and white footage of cars running where you have to use a hammer to take the wheel off in a pit stop, for God's sake. Oh, interestingly enough, on the plane...
Williams still do that, by the way.
On the plane on the way out to Hawaii, I found a 45-minute documentary that was produced by Whisper Films, Jake Humphrey's own, Norfolk's own, that was called The Art of the Pit Stop. And if you've never watched it, it's absolutely fascinating. It's really, really, really good.
Where's that?
It was just an on-demand thing that was on the United Airlines. I didn't get dragged off. Screen. They were really good. Shout out to United. They were absolutely brilliant with us, even when our flight was cancelled. I had no problems at all.
We don't want to hear about that.
But anyway, but no, it was absolutely fascinating. And it was all about, it was the Brabham team.
Oh, well, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, anyway. So anyway, your five classics, of your five modern era races, what would you say are essential races?
Well, let's kick off. Who wants to name their five essential?
I can give you one for definite, which is the Austin race.
Yes,
I really like that
yes,
circuit.
Absolutely.
Really enjoyable.
I'd be devastated if they took that off.
I guess we're putting Canada in that tranche.
In the more modern? I don't know. No.
So, where does Spielberg rate? Because obviously it was there years ago, but now it's come back again. Is that...
I would put that in that, and especially with Red Bull's presence.
Well, sort of I would put it in classics, really.
Well, we've already got our five classics, haven't we? Because it wouldn't be any of those, would it?
Well, so that's... And it didn't make it. But I don't know whether it's... You'd have to basically draw a line and say... Because I still look at tracks like China as a new circuit. They've been racing there for over 10 years. And it's, you know, crazy.
I mean, I'm excited about Turkey coming back. I like that track.
Mm. Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, I think going back from... Or back to sort of gaming experience, it's quite a nice track to drive, actually. Even though F1 2011 was pretty terrible in terms of physics.
Any other ones we feel we'd need to keep in those sort of five newer ones? I mean, Qatar hasn't even had a Grand Prix yet, so...
I could probably just about think of ones outside of that list. I mean, my Golden Age knowledge isn't exactly that great. Probably... The old Hockenheim. I know that's never going to happen. There's just a forest now, it's just a load of trees. Possibly Rouen was like a death trap.
No mention of Imola, actually. Or San Marino. Yeah. Just says Germany.
Because obviously they had two races, didn't they? And of course Spain had two races as well.
Because it was the European Grand Prix and they swapped, didn't they? They alternated. Yeah. God, no one, please don't bring back the Valencia Grand Prix. For the love of God, don't. Just
no, that's not here. It's interesting, actually, ones they haven't included.
What would I rather, the Valencia Grand Prix or Pasta?
Yeah.
The Valencia Grand Prix. Easily the Valencia Grand Prix, which is the one he won. So,
and that's Barca.
Oh, was it Barca? Oh, okay.
Close enough.
See, even Valencia couldn't give us anything as interesting as a Pasta win.
I mean, we still don't really know what Azerbaijan is like. I think we've seen it once, but we want to see it again. Singapore is supposedly a really important feature on the calendar now. We haven't even mentioned it.
It's done, isn't it? It's after this race. Where is it that's pulling out? Is it Malaysia?
Malaysia is stopping. I have a feeling that Singapore is more of a bargaining tool.
Right, okay, fine.
Now, I was going to say, the owners for the Azerbaijan race were in Bahrain, and they were talking about the circuit, and I think they were saying, you know, they've got good, you know, feedback and they know how to improve it, so... Hopefully this year will be a cracker.
Yeah, I think it's got some great characteristics. We'll see.
Sweeping run up through the old town is amazing. I look forward to seeing that again.
Someone's going to end up in a tower. And Paul Ricard as well, which is where the French Grand Prix is going to come back. So I guess we've kind of said Belgium, Brazil, Britain, Italy and Japan. Or Monaco is probably five of those six.
If you'd allow six, it would be those six. If I had to choose five, I wouldn't include Monaco. But that's just because I would let my... heart rule my head on that one.
And I wouldn't want to ditch Japan, even though I have. So I guess we say that six, because you've got like 20 races. And then the best of the rest, let's just nail it down. Best of the rest, I say Turkey. Let's have one each. Turkey.
Pass, I can't think.
This got survey fatigue.
There's so many pretty good races, that's the thing. But
pretty good races, but there's only one really good race that's not.
Just say Canada now.
Canada.
Yeah, I do like Canada, to be fair. That is a good track, yeah.
For the sake of not being boring and saying Canada, looking back at Baku, last year the GB2 race, I think there's a sprint race particularly, was unbelievable. I mean, mostly, I know my brother's probably listening at home thinking, you know, that's because of Matsushita, or as we call him, Matsu. Because completely up the restarts, what, two or three times, and ended up getting taken out after a third restart. And I think Mitch Evans and Sean Gallagher got taken out by him at one of the previous restarts, and just cut to a shot of those two clapping as he crashed out of the race. So, you know, after one chance in an F1 race, perhaps Baku just needs a bit more competition, because it's slipstream city from the last corner down to the first corner. It's what, a 1.5 kilometre long straight, so
we'll see. Do you want to say Austin, Steve?
Can do if you like.
I'll do it. Good man. No, that's it. Brilliant question. Absolutely nailed it. Here's an important question as well. Well done for everyone still listening, by the way. Imagine what it'd been like filling in the survey. Jesus Christ. Question 28. The 2017 Formula One World Championship has 20 scheduled races, which makes it sound like they've got some wiggle room, and they really haven't. What do you consider to be the ideal number of F1 races per season? Less than 15, 16 to 18, 19 to 21, more than 21. I don't have an opinion. Guys?
To be honest, I think 20, just because it's a nice round number. And they go on about the length of the season. But if they sort out all the breaks in between, because they'll have a 4-week summer break and another 4-week break in there as well somewhere. If you cut those down to just 2-week breaks, you've got an extra month. So,
I agree. I think they've got it much better. There aren't many back-to-back races this time either. But
it needs to be a long season, because you need to. Firstly, you need to let the guys recover, because it's grueling. It's, you know, it's not what we would class as classic endurance racing, but it hits the body hard. Plus, you have all of the equipment that you have to transport. Plus, you've got ongoing research that needs to be done into improving the car. So it has to be a long season, but just to allow those things to develop and percolate and give us the best racing that it can.
And if you start keeping the distance in between the races the same, but taking the races down, you start to, I would almost believe you'd have a more foregone conclusion at some point, or rather, I don't know, but that's how I feel about it. So I think 20's a good number.
20's plenty.
I think the worst part of the season easily is the off season. So perhaps if you started late February, early March, and ended early December in Abu Dhabi or wherever, where the weather's not a problem, and have a, say, 2.5-3 month off season with 25 races, have a few back to backs, mostly 2 weeks in between, I think it would be quite good. Plus the money generated, you'd be able to, assuming that the teams are going to invest in F1 in terms of shares, obviously they're getting out more from what they're doing, you know, getting more from the fruits of their labor, so they can pay to have more crew members and perhaps have like B teams and whatever, like they used to back in the old days when they had test teams. So perhaps on that front it wouldn't be too much of a problem.
You've salvaged it there at the end, because I think there's a lot of Formula One teams going 25 races now. Steve?
No, 20 for me is good. Yeah, I think 20 is good.
Continuing, thinking of general admission ticket prices, it asks you here what you think is for race day. When does it start to become expensive? What's too expensive? What's reasonable and what's good value? Bearing in mind that general admission ticket, as we now know, for Silverstone is £199, which I would say is probably twice as much as I would consider to be. I think I would have normally expected it to be up to £100 would be a lot of money, but probably about right.
I think my girlfriend said she found tickets for the full weekend, including practice sessions, that's £399. You think the difference for the full weekend and just the race day admission? That's crazy. So
that's how they get you.
Yeah, it is. It's, and camping, obviously.
The thing is what you've got to, most people are going to make a comparison to, is they're going to sort of say, well, for that price, what sort of holiday can I have in Europe? You know, considering you can get your Ryanair flights and all that sort of stuff and cheap hotels. I think a lot of people are going to go, well, I can have a long weekend away.
I did see you can actually have the spa weekend camping all 3 days plus travel for £300. So why go to Silverstone would be my question, and obviously it depends on the race.
Let's do a road trip.
I'm up for it completely. What do you reckon, Callum? You're a student, so you probably haven't got a handle on money yet.
Yeah, I'm not really the travelling kind either, so I'm not sure about spa, but yeah, we'll see. I think on the ticket prices though, if you look at football and there's more sort of campaigns,
season tickets,
no, not necessarily.
Discounts.
That would be quite a good idea. But there's more campaigns for things like 20 is plenty, you know, cheaper tickets generally. So if you apply that kind of a thing to F1, because obviously if you go to a Grand Prix day, you get support races and everything like that. So inevitably, prices are going to be higher because you're paying for more. So perhaps sort of 70, 80 quid is enough.
Maybe people would potentially be willing to pay it if they saw what percentage of their money went where. So if there was a bit of transparency and actually, okay, 199 quid's a lot. Oh, but okay, this is what they need to do this. And so, okay, X percentage of that money goes towards track maintenance. The cost of the track maintenance for the year is this. That means that your contribution on a race day, if everyone pays this money, is actually only the nth percent of how much it takes to maintain the track. I would kind of go, right, at least I can understand. I might not be more inclined to spend money on it, but at least I understand, rather than going, oh, they're just trying to bleed us dry.
I had a similar viewpoint on Banham Zoo when I went there a couple of days ago. I just wanted to know what the breakdown of the price was.
That is a lot of money, Banham Zoo, for the size of it, really.
Not quite the same as Silverstone.
Thrigby
Hall. So if you go to Thrigby Hall, I'll leave these two to talk about Thrigby Hall, you can see that. Thrigby Hall, Banham Zoo, some of Norfolk's finest tourist attractions. Go check them out. Doesn't matter where you are in the world, we are open for business.
We're talking about classic race, or, you know, necessary races. Why didn't we bring up Snetterton? The push.
Holy mother God.
Push for Snetterton to hold a Formula One Grand Prix. We need to spearhead that.
It's a great track to drive around.
If you do a bit of research, they had some info on their website about their vision for the future and the complex they wanted to build there. And that the complex they wanted could have hosted Formula One. It was that big.
I think it's just a bit on the back burner. But if we can get it into Formula One, maybe it'll happen. So basically, we decided Formula One is too expensive, so that's good. Please rank the following Grand Prix features and their level of importance in influencing your decision to attend a Formula One Grand Prix. One most important, no, one not important, five very important. I mean, these are things like good vantage points, covered spectator areas, ease of parking, paddock tours. We don't care. 4, the drivers and teams. Here we go. Which of the following statements best describes you in relation to support of F1? I am loyal to one team, whoever is driving for them. I'm loyal to one driver, whoever they drive for. I support a number of teams. I'm impartial.
Second one is a quick answer.
Go.
Lewis Hamilton, yeah.
I mean, I'm impartial, but if there's a driver I like, I follow him. I follow teams I like, so it's Formula One. You follow everyone, don't you?
I think impartial is the best term for it. There are very rarely teams I want to see do badly. There's very rarely Seb Vettel people that I don't want to see do well. So I've said there's probably only one person on the grid that I would root against. Two if Pastor makes a comeback. So yeah, but it's like when I'm watching NFL, there are teams that I will actively want to see lose. Patriots, Steelers. Like, I don't care who they're playing. I want to see them lose, right? But in Formula One, I don't really want to see anyone lose as long as you get a good race out of it.
Well, I'm an exile for the time being.
So. Or Jensen. Until yeah. Monaco.
But I'd be loyal to him pretty much whatever. You know, even if he's racing at Indy, I'd still watch it.
And I'm, of course, a journalist, so entirely impartial. It's just a shame we don't have any Norfolk involvement because that was always good fun. And we have, you know, special praise for our honorary Norfolkians. Question 32 asks who our favourite Formula One team, top three, and favourite. Well, we don't have one, and we've just gone through that, so we'll ignore those. In terms of drivers and teams, we'll go through that as well. Everyone on here is a current driver. Yeah, looks like they haven't thrown in Damon Hill, I'm afraid, Rich. Yeah, I would be disappointed.
Got his autograph, huh?
Wait, twice. Really? Twice? That was rude.
I wrote to Jordan in 1998. I put a pun in there because they were using Goodyear tyres. I said, have a Goodyear racing. And I got a letter back with some autographs from Damon Hill.
What was that? Did he say, great pun, thanks Damon?
I think it was before I really knew what a pun was, but I knew what I meant.
Yeah, you had the art of the pun before you even knew it, Rich. I love that.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Part five, I hope we're at the end. Well done everyone for continuing to listen to this as we sort out Formula One. We are getting through, we are sorting out Formula One here. The spectacle of F1. Thank you for your feedback so far. We now have the final section, hey, of the study. It was a study now, where we would like your thoughts on Formula One in general and how we make it better. On a scale of 1 to 5, where 1 is strongly disagree and 5 is strongly agree, please rate your levels of agreement with the following statements about Formula 1. Formula 1 is the pinnacle of motorsport.
For me, I strongly agree with that, yeah.
I'd say it's absolutely the pinnacle of technology, but it's not the... Well, it's the pinnacle of motorsport, but it isn't the pinnacle of technology, which I think is more WEC. But in terms of the actual racing, you know, F1 has the best drivers in the world. You know, even Alonso can't get in a good car, and he's the best driver out there, so...
Well, the next one says Formula One showcases the best drivers.
Yes, I suppose you probably have to say yes to that one.
Needs to do more to attract and retain new fans?
Yeah, it does.
Definitely.
In better health now than it was 5 years ago?
What even was 5 years ago? It was 2012, wasn't it?
Good season, 2012. We had seven different winners from the first seven races.
I don't think really you can really judge it, you know, because... Each year will fluctuate compared to the last, so you can't really say there are certain eras in F1. You can only say there are certain years and certain sort of competitions. Obviously, there are rivalries that span 4 or 5 years or whatever, but generally, you can't be quite so arbitrary as that.
My question about that is, in what detail are they asking? Are they talking about actually, like, in terms of how many teams have disappeared through financial difficulties, you know, like Manor, or are they talking about the racing, or is it just a general overall question?
I mean, it strikes me as a perception question, because you're asking people who have got no idea whether they think it's healthy or not.
In the last 5 years, you know, that we've gone from a top team spending, I think, probably about sort of $250 million to now sort of closer to four, which can't be good for the sport. You know, we've had teams disappear, drivers that were quite good disappear because other drivers have got better sponsorship. I'd probably, on that note, lean towards saying, and no, I don't think it has improved, but
I think it's really hard to answer at the moment, because is it in better shape than it was a year ago? Well, you've got brand new owners, and Bernie was, you know, potentially part of the problem a year ago, so yeah, it is. But well, yeah, but 5 years ago things were doing all right, weren't they? You know, you look back with rose-tinted glasses maybe, but it's too early to say whether or not Formula One's better now, because you're still in such a fledgling part of the new ownership, so it's really difficult to say.
Formula One should do more to promote all motorsport, not just F1. Couldn't give a shit. That's got nothing to do with it. Formula One safety initiatives benefit road users. Yeah.
Because you have things like ABS, traction control started, well, weren't necessarily originated in F1, but certainly developed to the sort of level that they are today.
That's interesting, because I always assumed it was the sort of campaigns and that sort of that people don't really pay any attention to. But yeah, in terms of the technology, spot on, Callum, I like that. Formula One has the right balance of entertainment and sport. I don't really know what that even means. Do they mean the concerts they put on afterwards?
WWE has the right balance between entertainment and
sport. I'm not even letting you talk about it. Formula One's business interests are now too important.
What are Formula One's business interests?
Well, I suppose if you're taking, like, Malaysia for next season has been dropped off the calendar, would that have happened under Bernie? Would you have seen the money and said, yeah, sure?
Or and I guess where they...
fans, let's move it somewhere else.
I guess where they race as well. You know, do they race where there's money rather than where
I think that's all going to change under new ownership. I think they, initially at least, they're going to start looking at being the people that give F1 back to the fans.
Back control.
No, adored it. Slippery slope. Question 35, which is most important out of this lot to Formula One? Features the fastest cars?
I think that is quite important if they're coming up from a feeder series.
Yeah. They have to be faster than the other single-seater cars, surely.
Yeah, definitely.
But is that not more of a case of making feeder series slower? Because faster cars don't necessarily make exciting racing. Because you look at, say, mid-2000s, so 2004, it was a year dominated by Ferrari. Loads of downforce, cars that are on rails, refueling, which generally doesn't help overtaking, and you compare that to, say, 2014, and you have things like the Duel in the Desert, and Hungary 2015 was an awesome race. So is it necessarily the case that if you make it faster, you make it more exciting?
No. No is the answer there, Callum. Is it important that Formula One attracts the rich and famous, Ped?
No. It's important that it attracts racing fans. I don't care what their financial status is.
I love that these are like the first question. Is it important that it's glamorous, Steve?
Well, if it's to continue from sort of history, then I suppose so. But is that really the initiative? I mean, you know, this survey is a bit weird, isn't it?
Well done, Steve. That's the right answer. Is it important Formula One has lots of overtaking and on-track action?
Well, obviously.
Yeah. Yes, that's important that's for every racing class.
Yes.
What idiot wrote these
things? I'll refer you to the Global Motorsport, whatever they were, Motorsport Network. Yeah. We're getting to the good stuff now. Is it important that it travels to exotic locations?
No.
Silverstone every year.
Exactly. No. Attracts the world's biggest companies. No one cares about that. Features pioneering technology.
Well, that's WEC's thing, really.
Has exciting races.
Well, yeah, obviously.
Features close competition.
Ooh, that's a difficult one.
Has spectacular crashes.
How American is that?
No one wants that. No one wants a spectacular crash. People want good action, and if there's a crash, we want people to be able to walk away from it. But only morbid bastards turn on the TV going, God, we have a good crash in this one.
Some people did want to watch crashes, though. I remember, I think it was during the 70s and 80s, I saw a documentary about it, and there was someone interviewed, and they said, oh, what about the crashes? I said, oh, yeah, we all have a good crash. And it's just like, that's someone driving that car at 200 miles an hour. You don't want to see them crash.
Never overestimate man and womankind would be my suggested answer to that. How important is it that we have lots of different winners?
Well, the start of 2012 was pretty good. Yeah. And there was, what, 7 winners in 7? And we didn't have a two-time winner until June.
Yeah, it was a good season because the championship was right completely open until the very final race, which is always good. And
I don't think it can be that open. I think your championship needs to, because it wasn't open between everyone in the field, it was between maybe 3 or 4 people.
I think the last,
that's what you need.
Like the last 3 or 4 races, I think it was the last 4 races there was 5 drivers or something still in it. Then by the time it got to the last 2, there was only 2 really in it. And that's, you know, perfect sense.
Actually, if we look at it as like a golden year kind of thing, you'd have to reference the late 90s, because generally it was, let's take 98, generally it was Hakkinen versus Schumacher, and their number twos were supporting them. So it would normally be those two that are on the podium pretty much every race barring reliability, and you'd get the occasional sort of Damon Hill that would come out of nowhere and win.
Belgium.
The last
Eddie Irvine sighting as winning. He was phenomenal at Suzuka, always.
Last 3, features the best drivers, yes. That it is dangerous?
I think that there has to be an element of risk, but I don't think it has to be dangerous. I think you have to do whatever you can to make it safe, but you can't completely eliminate the risk, because then you're not on the edge. You need to be on the edge in Formula 1.
Motorsport is naturally dangerous anyway, yeah, no matter what form you look at.
Danger, but you don't need to make it more dangerous than it is.
Yeah. And on a related subject, attract celebrities. Yep, fine, we're not answering that one. Okay, which of the five following words or phrases do you most strongly associate with Formula 1? You're allowed five again. Shall I read them out? Yeah. Accessible, boring, competitive, complicated, cool, corrupt, courageous, dangerous, dynamic, entertaining, exciting, exclusive, expensive, glamorous, global, fun, innovative, popular, prestigious, retro, successful, technological, threatened, world-class, youthful, none of these.
One of them that stands out straight away is glamorous, because you do have a lot of glamour in Formula 1 right now. And there always has been, to be honest, with some of the drivers and things.
Steve's getting progressively more off with this survey. I'm enjoying it. He's going to completely flip out by the time we're finished.
I would put world class in there, because it's supposed to be, excluding WEC, sorry Callum, but it's supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport. It is supposed to be the top of the pile.
Entertaining.
Yeah, entertaining.
I think courageous also goes in there, because the drivers have to be courageous to step in the vehicle.
I'm not so sure you can really put specific words on it.
Were you going for none of these, Callum?
I suppose, but it's about more sort of semantics and actual sort of emotions that you associate with Formula One rather than specific words. Because I suppose if you're going to categorise it, then you'd probably say competition is right up there. Then obviously it has to be at the top of everything, so I suppose world class. Dynamic, possibly, because you can't really just go through something and it be just a turgid affair of complete nothingness. I guess it kind of needs popularity to an extent to survive, but then again, who wants to be the popular one in the room?
I would actually say the word on there that jumps out to me most to describe it is global, because it truly is a global sport. It's all over the world. It has multiple nationalities involved in it, not just racing, but in terms of team ownership and team engineers. It's widely consumed around the world. I mean, all we have to do is look at the wonderful people that follow our Facebook page.
Exactly.
Very multinational, diverse fan base and employee group as well. So global for me is the word that describes it the most.
And of course, you can follow our Facebook page. The handle is at the NRF1, or visit fb.me/the NRF1. And of course, on Twitter, we are at the NRF1 too. We're nearly there. Question 37. God, how many questions are there? Formula One is... Steve's literally got his head in his hands. Formula One is constantly evaluating new ideas to help improve the spectacle of Formula One. Please rate your level of agreement with the following statements about the spectacle of Formula One. 1 is strongly disagree, 5 strongly agree, or 6 if you have no firm opinion. Okay, so we're going to rattle through these. The introduction of drag reduction system has improved racing.
I think there is a way where it is effective, because I think if you look at the first three races, it's been largely sort of impotent, really, for want of a better word. So if you can get it to a point, and it requires a lot of fine-tuning, but if you can get it to a point where drivers can follow and it sort of mitigates the effect of dirty air, and you're actually having the slightly faster driver with a decent chance of overtaking if he pulls off a good move, and then to that end it does improve the racing. But you can't really have, I think a case in point that sticks out in my mind was Austria 2015. You just get every single car that would just blast past another one under DRS, and that would be the only overtaking moves in the entire race.
I think we had it in China, didn't we? This year, it kind of, the balance was almost spot on. In race, refueling should be reintroduced.
No.
You quite like it though, don't you, Steve?
Yeah.
You'd say yes, wouldn't you?
I knew I was going to get loads of no's to that, but yeah, I always really liked it.
We're going to get into the out there ones now. Success ballast should be used. It's a handicap system, so the winning teams get loaded with ballast. It slows them down and it keeps everyone closer together.
No.
Because then it turns into A1 Grand Prix.
Or touring cars.
It's just too artificial, isn't it?
Yeah. So you shouldn't be penalised for excelling in a sport that's designed to push technological and physical limits. You should be rewarded for that. If you're successful, and you look at the rise and fall of some teams that have been in Formula 1, some of them have been catastrophic, and yet some teams will consistently be up there, some teams will drop off completely. I mean, look at Williams, for an example. They've had such an up-and-down history in Formula 1. If you want to be better, you have to get better. You shouldn't have to have the people in front of you that are performing well taken down a notch so that you can catch up.
McLaren over the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Different heights.
Tyres should be produced to degrade more rapidly. So, i.e., The ones last year, or the year before that. No, because they were quite popular.
Everything in moderation. I mean, I think if you look at the contrast between 2010 and 2011, there were probably more overtakes in 2011.
I loved the cars falling off the cliff, but the problem was everyone learnt about it and then they ended up adjusting and they couldn't race properly. But
that's exactly it. You want people to not be managing their car through a race. You want them to be racing their car.
I think it's nice when you have a divergence in strategy, because part of what I found sort of up to the safety car quite fascinating about Bahrain was that there was at least the potential that Mercedes would go one way and Ferrari would go the other. So that's the kind of thing that personally I'd rather see more often, is that not necessarily drivers are nannying the tyres, but more they can push, but they have to be smart about it.
Reverse grids introduced? I mean, if you put that in front of a load of Formula One teams, they will come up with a way to get around that. It's almost certainly to happen. They're very clever people. There should be more than one tyre supplier. No. Definitely not. Rich? No.
I'm not really fussed. As long as you've got tyres to go, that's what counts.
Because the problem is, it basically rules out half the field if one tyre is miles ahead of the other. So it's a definite no for me. Two shorter F1 races over a weekend rather than one Grand Prix? No, I agree. We have a Grand Prix. That's how it should be. Annual. Exactly. A disgraceful idea. I hate it. Annual budget cap for teams to be introduced and policed. Yes, for me.
There's a cap, but you have to make sure that every team has that money. That's what I would say, is you don't go to, you know, Mercedes, you can't spend more than X, but there's no way that Force India would be able to even have X to spend. If you're going to introduce a salary cap, everyone needs to have the same cap of money, and those teams that can't generate it on their own have to have some form of subsidy from F1, managing body, whatever, at which point when that team becomes successful, they have a certain amount of time in which to pay that money back. The idea being, if everyone's got the money to spend, some teams may develop and actually get back to the top. The success and money that comes with that is, okay, you borrowed X amount from us, you won Y amount from us because you managed to vault up to fifth in the championship, we'll take some of that money back now, thank you very much.
Key words there are, and policed, I would also argue, because that would be the tricky bit. Teams can purchase and run customer cars?
No, because you're not a constructor. I mean, if you look at Haas, they've basically gotten bits and pieces from Ferrari, bits and pieces from Dallara and other places. All right, they have their own designers, but all they're really doing is they're running a team. They're not really an F1 team, they're an F2 team.
Damning indictment of Kyle's team there. Just wait until you meet Kyle, Callum. I'm sure he'll be fine. Sprinkler systems should be introduced to run random wet. Where everyone's shaking their heads there.
Oh, that's a terrible idea.
Terrible idea.
You're making the race more dangerous.
It's asked on the survey, it might happen.
That's the sort of that Bernie's come up with, and thank God he's gone.
F1 should return to using V8 engines.
I'd personally like to see V10s back, but
I don't see why you need to change them, because if you're talking about the future, I think it's fascinating that you can get a 1.6 hybrid engine to go as quick as an old V10, if not quicker.
I don't see the fuss, and I know people love the noise, but we've just got a different noise now, and that was the noise then. That's great, just make them a bit louder so we can hear them properly maybe, but I don't see the big fuss.
Sorry, we just see a train out the window.
Oh, you just saw a train. Well, I should say we're at the Buck Inn in Norwich. An additional third driver race should be introduced over the GP weekend. I love this idea. Well, it just gives them a race. Yeah, just do it. What has anyone got to lose over just doing it? An F1 race on Saturday should be introduced for all events. No, that's then two races just on a different day. Points should be awarded for qualifying.
No,
because qualifying gets you onto the grid. Why should you have that? Would be like saying, oh, I bet is like you get points for the fastest lap. Is that on there as well?
That's the next one. Yeah.
So no, absolutely not.
One thing, if you added points for qualifying, you could possibly circumvent the issue of having reverse grids.
But then, if you have qualifying points, what if a driver's title gets settled on a Saturday, and the Sunday is the main event? And then no one will want to watch it because nothing's going to happen.
What a point, Callum. What a point. Question 38, feedback. If there's anything anyone could have possibly missed, Steve. Well, yes, I did actually write some things. I said more InVision replays in TV coverage. You idiots, sort that out. I didn't sell that, but I didn't say the last bit. A Joker system for double points, as we came up with.
We talked about that, yeah.
So basically, just to run through the idea, teams can pick one race weekend to double points. So rather than just having everyone double points at the end, what each team gets...
quiz.
Yes, exactly. It's exactly where Peg got it from. Yeah. They can pick when they want, when they get to have double the points, and the top three teams from either the last race or the previous Constructors' Championships would be excluded, so they couldn't do it. I think it's a great idea. And please, please, please remove blue flags was the other thing I added. I hate blue flags.
Yeah, I agree.
If you want to lap someone, you overtake them. Agreed?
If you're fast enough to get on their backside, you should be fast enough to overtake them.
I don't care.
If you're going to argue that they're holding you up, that means that you're faster than them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be holding you up. That's the very definition of the phrase.
I'm not going to care if Sebastian Vettel is being held up. He needs to get past them and get on with it. That's straightforward. And if someone's chasing them and gets held up, then you're not going to...
The problem you will have there is potentially the unfair advantage of a team like Haas.
Yeah, moving Toro Rosso.
Easily for a Ferrari, but... then holding up a McLaren. McLaren? Wait, you can't hold up a McLaren. Sorry, apologies.
Laps, you know, yeah. So.
But holding up a Merc, you know.
They do that every now and again on occasions. It's like, did you notice how Alonso didn't get out of the way for Vettel? He waited till it got to the straight. And yet when Hamilton came along, I think it was, he was just like, yeah, I'm not even going to bother getting in the way.
But they went way too early. Like, they're halfway... there's like half the straight that separates them and they start waving blue flags and you think, just wait until they're in within like DRS range.
It's almost because they know they're going to ignore them, isn't it, in a way.
But maybe it should be a shown blue flag, is you have a race leader approaching you, they're within 3 seconds, and then a waved is you now need to get out of the way. So maybe it's an awareness system that they're not really using properly.
Just let them figure it out, I say.
Make them aware that there's a quicker car behind. Otherwise, if they go and try and defend their place...
Just leave it to their race engineer to radio them and just sort of say, well, look, you got race leader.
Make them aware of it so they can't say, oh, I didn't know. Make them aware of it, but then just let them sort it out. And to be fair to Formula One, I think there have been some really good developments this season that meant that people have been able to just get on with it in terms of overtaking penalties and things like that. More of that. You'll be pleased to know that the next thing says thank you. Question 39 says email permissions. I don't think we need to go through that. It's an offer of a 3-month subscription to some magazine. Because they're getting good advertising out of this.
It's not Chicane magazine, is it?
No, it's not Chicane magazine, with DT lovingly edited. It says, thank you so much for completing the global fan survey. On behalf of all the team at Motorsport Network, no worries, thank you so much for completing the global fan survey. Our promise to you is threefold. One, we will take your feedback and have them independently analysed by one of the world's leading sports research companies, Nielsen Sport. Cha-ching. Good advert for them. Two, we will prepare a summary of the key findings and make them available to you, the fans, and you at the NRF1 podcast. Thank you very much for filling out the survey in a podcast. First, and free of charge through our global media outlets and through the NRF1 podcast. It doesn't say that. Three, we will present the full results of your feedback to Formula One's key stakeholders, the teams, drivers, host circuits, the sports governing body, the FIA, and F1's new commercial rights holder, Liberty Media. Whether they bother to read it is another matter. With best regards, Charles Bradley, Global Editor-in-Chief, motorsport.com. Gents, do we feel that that was a cathartic exercise, or do you just want to go home?
Some of the questions were a bit weird, you know, and some of the angles I'm not really entirely sure what they're trying to scope from, but I could like to go home now. But
there were some interesting points raised, definitely there, but some of the questions were a bit stupid.
It's the interesting thing is, as we mentioned at the very beginning, I work in human resources, and that's a staff survey. That's what that is, but it's a staff survey for fans. So that's all it is. And the way that they're talking about presenting it and analysing it and bringing it out again is what we'll do. The FIA will look at it and they'll change precisely.
I've done this anyway, so it's not really a particularly productive exercise.
But the podcast was. We're agreed.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we're maybe not agreed.
Good chat on the pod. Always good chat on the pod.
We'll get people talking, and they can give us an opportunity for them to send us their ideas.
Well, please do send us. I mean, clearly there's no time sensitivity with this podcast, and you're probably going to need a week to listen to it. So, take it away, listen to it. If you want to let us know your thoughts on it, on all these things, then you know how to get in touch with us. You can email us at nrf1podcast@gmail.com. You know the Twitter and Facebook handles at the NRF1. And you can find all you need to in terms of our blogs, Prediction League, race reviews, Formula One news, predictions, everything. nrf1.uk. But for now, after an epic pod full of Formula One vigour. I'd like to say a big thanks to Stephen Rust, to Richard Baxter, to Perry Hamilton, and to Callum Springall. My name is Michael Bailey. This has been the NRF1 podcast. A big thank you to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online, where you can sign up at gpro.net/NRF1. Goodbye!